Welcome to American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues, your weekly guide through matters crucial to families and the preservation of traditional values in the Commonwealth and beyond. Archives of this and past shows are available at afaofpa.org. Now your host, a dedicated advocate for family values and the director of the American Family Association of Pennsylvania, Diane Gramley.
Christmas is just around the corner. We seem to see fewer and fewer manger scenes in yards and more reindeer, snowmen, and Santa Clauses. And of course, every mall has a Santa Claus for kids to sit on his knee and tell him what they want for Christmas. But of course, Santa always asks whether he or she has been naughty or nice. Have you ever wondered about Santa Claus? How did he become a part of Christmas? Is this jolly man in a red suit based upon a real person in history? Well, you've come to the right place to get some of those questions answered. My guest today is Bill Federer, a nationally known speaker, best-selling author, and president of AmeriSearch, Inc., a publishing company dedicated to researching America's noble heritage. You can go to his website, AmericanMinute.com, and check out his great books. Thanks, Bill, for being with us.
Great to be with you, Diane.
So the Catholics have St. Peter, the Irish have St. Patrick, the Greeks and Russians, the Greek Orthodox Church have St. Nicholas. Just who was St. Nicholas?
Well, he was the most popular Greek Orthodox saint. There are more Greek Orthodox churches named after Nicholas than anybody else.
Wow.
And a lot of Greeks are named Nick, right?
Okay.
And so it begins with the Roman persecution of the Christians for three centuries. And Nicholas is born in Asia Minor today. That's Turkey. And the movement was sweeping through Christianity called monasticism, where if you really become a Christian, you should follow Jesus's advice to the rich young ruler. One thing you lack, sell all, give to the poor, and come and follow me. And so Christians would get saved, give away all their money, and join monasteries. And so Nicholas decided he's going to give away his money, but he doesn't want to get the credit for giving it away. So he decides to do it anonymously. He would sneak into town at nighttime and throw money in the window of poor people. Supposedly, the money would land in a shoe or a stocking that's drying by the fireplace. Well, one story became popular. One merchant had gone bankrupt, and the creditors were coming not just to take his house, but to take his children and sex trafficking. And this merchant had three beautiful daughters. He knew if they were taken, it would be a terrible life for him. So he had an idea. He thought if he could hurry up and marry his daughters off, the creditors couldn't take him. Mm-hmm. Unfortunately, he did not have money for a dowry, which was needed in that area of the world for a legally recognized wedding. Well, Nicholas hears the problem. Late one night, throws money in the window, provides the dowry. The oldest daughter gets married. Big buzz, talk to the town, throws money in for the second daughter. And by the time the third daughter's turn, the dad's waiting up. And when Nicholas throws the money in the window, the dad runs outside and catches it. And Nicholas makes the father promise not to tell where the money came from. And that's the origin of the tradition of secret gift giving on the anniversary of Nicholas's death, which was December 6th in 343 A.D. So
then he headed on to, he gave all his money away and then decided to enter a monastery, but God intervened there.
He goes to the Holy Land, mm-hmm. Supposedly on a pilgrimage, and even stops off at the Church of the Nativity, right? So he is living now in the 300s. So this is three centuries after Christ. Mm-hmm. But they had a church over where Jesus, the birthplace was, where Jesus was born. Mm-hmm. So the pictures of Santa Claus kneeling at the manger, it sort of has a little truth to it.
Oh, wow.
He goes to the monastery, and basically monasticism, this movement, was their version of separation of church and state. If you really become a Christian, you should withdraw from the world and just enjoy your own personal relationship with God. And so
totally ignoring the fact that Jesus said, told us to be salt and light. But anyway, too many Christians today even ignore that part.
Yeah, so Nicholas is about to take his vows and you'll never hear from him again, but somehow the Lord tells him not to hide his light under a bushel. Mm-hmm. So he gets on a boat, goes back to Asia Minor, gets off at a big port city called Myra, and unbeknownst to him, the bishop had died, and the church leaders could not decide who the next bishop was going to be. And so one of them has a dream. The first person to church the next day would be named Nicholas, and he was to be their next bishop.
Wow.
Well, sure enough, Nicholas is the first one to church. They ask his name, they break the news, and he's not too thrilled, because the Roman emperor Diocletian was arresting bishops and killing them.
Oh.
So it was sort of like, you be the bishop. No, you first. No, exactly. Seriously, yeah. You be the bishop. And right. and so he becomes the bishop. He's arrested. He's put in jail. And then the unthinkable, the Roman emperor Diocletian is struck with an intestinal disease so painful he abdicates the throne on May 1st, 305 AD. This is sort of a little poetic humor. By this time, the emperors had been declaring themselves a god with a little g, sprinkling gold dust in their hair and demanding their image be worshipped.
Wow.
So this was sort of like a god resigning.
Right.
Well, the next emperor is Galerius. He continues the persecution. He's struck with an intestinal disease and dies in 311 AD. And now there's no emperor. And the four most powerful generals decide to fight it out as to who the next emperor will be. Two are defeated, comes down to Constantine and Maxentius. And Constantine, supposedly the day before the battle of the Milvian Bridge, he sees the sign of Christ in the sky. And he puts it on all of his shields and symbols. He wins. What's the sign of Christ? It's the first two Greek letters for the name Christ. So Greeks would abbreviate names with two letters, like we abbreviate states, like California, CA. Well, the first Greek letter for the name Christ is written as X. It makes the K sound for Christ. It's called the Chi. Right. And the second Greek letter that makes the R sound is written as a big P, and it's called Rho. So it's called the Chi Rho, the X, the P. And so you'll see this on 4th century Christian artwork. And so
back up,
over the
back
centuries.
Up, I didn't mean to interrupt, but back up. So Xmas, when you see Xmas, that is not Xing Christ out. That's actually the Greek letter for Christ.
Right, and right. Okay. And it became part of an oath where you'd swear to tell the truth, cross my heart.
Oh.
Or you'd sign on a document at the Christ cross. Mm. Now it's called sign at the X.
Right.
And then they would kiss it to show sincerity, and that's come down to us as the X's and the O's on the bottom of the valentine.
Wow.
But So X stood for Christ. And so now, 313 AD, Constantine issues the Edict of Milan, and Christianity is now legal. And so Nicholas is let out of jail, and he preaches against paganism. So nearby to Myra is Ephesus, and one of the seven wonders of the ancient world, the Temple to Diana. Twice as big as the Parthenon, 127 huge pillars and temple prostitutes.
Wow.
It's the Las Vegas of the Mediterranean. So Apostle Paul preached against Diana worship, right? They're not buying the little idols anymore. And all the people get together and say, great is Diana, the goddess of the Ephesians. They chant it for 2 hours. And Paul said, let me go out and talk to them. And they go, no, these people are crazy. They'll kill you. And so Paul preached against Diana worship. Nicholas preached against Diana worship.
Wow.
And they tear the temple down. He preached against exposure of unwanted infants. So in Rome, the mother would bear the child and lay the child at the father's feet. If the father picked it up, they'd keep it. But if he thought it didn't look healthy or they couldn't afford it, the mother would have to put the baby in a basket and set it out in the woods and let it die, called exposure.
Oh my goodness.
There was a cave outside of Rome called the Depository, and they would put the babies in the baskets and they would die. And matter of fact, Rome was founded in their legend by two abandoned boys in the woods, and a she-wolf came by and nursed them, Romulus and Remus. But I mean, we hear these stories of an old couple knock on the door, they open it, there's a baby in a basket. Who leaves a baby in a basket at the door of a stranger? The Roman women, right? And so Nicholas preaches against this, and so he would have been a pro-life preacher today.
Right, exactly. Yeah, and we have safe boxes where if a mom doesn't want to keep a baby she can take the baby to a safe box, usually at a fire station, something like that, and leave the baby anonymously rather than in a cave to die. So that's the opposite end of the idea of abandonment. One's to kill, one's to allow them to live.
So then Nicholas preached against the Olympics because they ran them naked. I won't get into all that, but the word gym for gymnasium is the Greek word for naked.
Oh, you're kidding. Wow.
So he would have been a fire and brimstone preacher today, pro-life preacher. And then there's the Arian heresy. A guy named Arius, a bishop, said that Jesus was a little less than God, a created being. He writes a catchy song. The Visigoths start converting to Arianism, and it splits the church. And since Constantine had legalized Christianity and made it the de facto religion of the Roman Empire, now it's splitting the Roman Empire. And so Constantine orders all the bishops to Nicaea to settle it. They do. It's called the Nicene Creed. And the story is that Nicholas was so upset at Arius for starting the Arian heresy that he slapped him. And so you'll see the artwork of 325 AD Consul, and I see all the bishops sitting around with Constantine in the middle, and then there's a pit, and in the pit is Arius. And so Jolly will say Nick had a little temper.
Right.
And then he confronted corrupt politicians. He didn't just confront Arius. And so there was a politician, a governor, who was going to execute some soldiers to cover up his corruption. Mm-hmm. And Nicholas hears about it and goes down to the square and breaks through the crowd, grabs the sword out of the executioner's hand, and then in front of everybody tells by the Holy Spirit what the corrupt governor was doing. And the governor realizes nobody could know the details other than God, and so he begs Nicholas to pray for him. And then there's miracles attributed to Nicholas. One is there was a famine, and grain, the ships would take it from North Africa through Asia Minor to Rome. Nicholas is in Asia Minor, so he'd go down to the port and ask the soldiers to unload some of their grain to feed his people, promising God would bless them. Well, on their return trip, they said the grain that was left had multiplied and they had more than enough. So like Elijah's story of the little widow with the meal barrel that didn't run empty. And then there was a storm. Fishermen and sailors couldn't get back. They get Nicholas. He prays. The sea becomes calm. Sort of like Jesus calming the sea. But he dies in 343 AD on December 6th, and the Greeks would leave presents for each other. Then Justinian is the Christian Roman emperor. He builds the Hagia Sophia, that huge church that's still there. They just turned it into a mosque. But Justinian built a church in Myra and names it for St. Nicholas. And then Vladimir the Great in 988 AD of Russia converts to Greek Orthodox Christianity and adopts Nicholas as the patron saint of Russia. And then the Muslims invade. And all seven churches mentioned in the book of Revelation are wiped out.
Wow.
Ephesus, Smyrna, Pergamum, Thyatira, Sardis, Philadelphia, Laodicea, and they were afraid that they were going to destroy the grave of St. Nicholas. Mm-hmm. And that was a serious threat because in 846 AD, 11,000 Muslim Saracen pirates came up to Rome and trashed the bones of St. Peter and St. Paul.
Oh, wow.
And it was after that that Pope Leo IV built the 39-foot wall around the Vatican. Christians didn't want St. Nicholas's bones destroyed, so they move his grave to Italy in the year 1087, and they build a cathedral. The Cattedrale Niccolo de Bari, Cathedral of Nicholas of Bari. And the Pope that dedicates it is Urban II. And you know him because he went to the kings of England or kings of Europe at the Council of Clermont, 1095 AD. And he begs him to send help to the Greeks. They do. It's called the First Crusade. Mm. So the same Pope that welcomed Nicholas's remains to Italy is the one who called for the First Crusade. And then you have the gift giving with St. Nicholas is now in Italy. And it becomes so popular that St. Francis of Assisi, sort of in protest, creates the nativity scene. Jesus, Mary, Joseph, donkeys in the manger saying, all the gift giving's fine, but we need to refocus on the real reason for the season.
So
Jesus,
Nicholas,
the Son of God, was born
in
a manger.
So Christmas had become more focused on the gift giving and on St. Nicholas. And then St. Francis of Assisi saw the need to refocus on Jesus and on Jesus' birth. Something like today's Christmas. We have so much emphasis on gift giving, Santa Claus and such as that. We need to refocus on the birth of Jesus as part of that.
Right. And then you have Martin Luther starts the Reformation in 1517. And by this time, there's a saint's day for every day of the year. Churches have side altars to the saints and relics, little pieces of bone and hair. And he considers this a distraction from Christ.
Yeah.
So he ends the saints' days, including the popular St. Nicholas Day. But the Germans like the gift giving. Mm-hmm. So he moved all the gift giving to December 25th and said all gifts come from the Christ child.
Wow.
And the German pronunciation of Christ child is Christkindl. Kind means child, like kindercare, kindergarten, and Christ means Christ.
Oh, okay.
So Christkindl means Christ child. Over the years, Christkindl got pronounced Kris Kringle.
Wow.
So Kris Kringle is really Christkindl, which means Christ child. And then you have the tree, and you have
it's some of that. I mean, my understanding, actually got all this information from your articles about Santa Claus and about St. Nicholas and such. But tell us how King Henry VIII of England, how unlike Martin Luther, how did this king of England, King Henry VIII, interpret Christmas? How did he want Christmas to be viewed?
And yeah,
how did the Puritans respond to
that? Made
it a party
time.
Yeah, party time. Yeah,
so... Yeah, Henry VIII made Christmas like Mardi Gras. Mm. There's drinking and wassailing and acrobats and court jesters, and he would fling sugar plums at people, and they would have cross-dressing and boy bishops and bear baiting, where they put bears in a pit, sort of like dog fighting. Mm-hmm. And it was just this mockery and party time. Yeah. And everybody get drunk. And so when the Puritans come along, they outlaw Christmas. They passed a law.
Yeah, that's understandable, whether being celebrated that way.
Yeah. So you have 1643, the Puritans passed an ordinance. The sins of our forefathers have turned this feast of Christ into an extreme forgetfulness of him by giving liberty to carnal and sensual delights. Mm-hmm. And then a Puritan leader, Cotton Mather, says, can you in your conscience think that our Holy Savior is honored by mad mirth, long eating, hard drinking, and so forth?
Right.
So the Puritans settled New England, and they actually had a 5-shilling fine for anybody caught celebrating Christmas.
Wow.
And it wasn't until the Dutch came over, and the Dutch loved Christmas. So the Dutch pronunciation of Saint Nicholas is Sant Niklaus. So when you say Santa Claus, you're saying the Dutch pronunciation of Saint Nicholas. So the Dutch, this is where it gets interesting. You know, Catholic saying that Saint Peter's at the gates of heaven?
Right.
Well, the Dutch do a take on the book of Revelation, where Jesus will return at the end of the world to judge the living and the dead, riding a white horse. And the saints will come back with him, riding white horses, right? Jude 1:14, behold, the Lord cometh with 10,000s of his saints to execute judgment. And Revelation 19, and the armies which were in heaven followed upon him on white horses. And so the reasoning was that St. Nicholas is a saint. So he will be one of those riding a white horse, coming back with Jesus at the day of judgment, as will we if Jesus doesn't return yet.
Right.
But to the Dutch, Nicholas is so special, they have him coming back once a year for a little mini judgment day, a little checkup on the kids to see who's naughty, see who's nice. So in Holland, they have St. Nicholas dressed as a bishop riding back on a white horse.
Wow.
And he does judgment. He has his books, right?
Listen, and naughty and nice, yeah.
And so Daniel 7 says, I beheld the Ancient of Days. His throne was like a fiery flame. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set. The books were open. And then you have Revelation 20. I saw the great white throne, him who sat upon it, from whose face the earth and the heaven fled away. And I saw the dead, small and great, standing before God. And the books were open. Mm. And so here you have St. Nicholas doing what? Opening books. Well,
eventually
turns into the book of the naughty and the nice. And the angels turn into the elves. And saints come from heaven. That turns into the North Pole. And then he's riding a horse, but in Norway, in Finland, they had a few horses riding a reindeer. Then it turns into pulling a sleigh. And then the Dutch have another twist, a helper named Zwarte Piet, Black Peter. He's a Moor. He's a Muslim. And people forget the Muslims controlled Spain for 700 years.
Right.
And over 1 million Europeans were sold into slavery.
Wow.
There were whole Catholic orders called the Trinitarians, and they would collect alms and donations to ransom people from slavery. Sort of like I was on Eric Metaxas's program, and he worked with Christian Solidarity International to raise money to do what? Rescue Christians out of slavery in Sudan. Still happening today.
Right.
So Nicholas would give the good kids presents, but his little helpers, Zwarte Piet, would put the naughty kids in a gunny sack, take them back to Spain, and sell them into Muslim slavery.
Oh my goodness.
So when you tell a little boy that Santa Claus is coming, they start crying. And I was doing a call-in radio show, and a guy calls in and says, yeah, I was raised in Holland, and all the boys in my neighborhood would go to sleep the night before St. Nicholas came with pocket knives in our pockets. I said, why is that? He goes, that's to cut ourselves out of the gunny sack.
Out of the gunny sack. Oh, wow.
Well, the Dutch settled New Amsterdam, and the Dutch started a church called the St. Nicholas Dutch Reformed Church. He's the patron saint of New Amsterdam, is St. Nicholas.
And that's New York now, right? Is that New York?
New York.
Okay.
And so, yeah, 1624 is when they settled it, and the church grew when the British took over New York, and New Amsterdam turned it into New York in 1664. The church moved. It burnt in 1741. They rebuilt it. And then in 1866, they laid the cornerstone for this enormous cathedral at 5th Avenue and 48th Street, the St. Nicholas Dutch Reformed Church.
Oh, wow.
It was the largest Protestant church in North America. Teddy Roosevelt went there. But then as the city became more financial, church attendance dwindled, and the church elders sold it to Sinclair Oil Company, who tore it down and built an oil building.
Oh, you're sort of sad. Kidding. Oh, very sad. Yes.
Back to New York, you have Washington Irving, father of American literature, wrote Rip Van Winkle, Legend of Sleepy Hollow, came up with a name Gotham for New York City. He wrote Dietrich Knickerbocker's History of New York from the beginning to the end of the Dutch dynasty. And in there, he talks about Dutch traditions of St. Nicholas visiting once a year, right, for his mini judgment day. But he describes him no longer dressed in a bishop's outfit, but in a typical Dutch outfit of long trousers, right, baggy trousers called knickerbockers. And then he was wearing boots, leather belt, stocking hat, even had a pipe. So, but he still calls St. Nicholas, and then Clement Moore in New York. He's a Hebrew professor at Episcopal Seminary. His family donated land for a Clement Moore Park there in New York City at the corner of 10th Avenue and 22nd Street. Anyway, he writes a poem for his children, a visit from who? St. Nicholas. So the night before Christmas, all through the house, and I creature was turning out, even while stockings were hung by the chimney with care in hopes that St. Nicholas would soon be there. So now he's not only not dressed as a bishop, he's shrunk. But he still calls St. Nicholas. And then, you know, you have Thomas Nast, Civil War illustrator, Coca-Cola, he's full grown again. But if you peel back the layers, there really was a man named Nicholas who became a Christian, who loved Jesus enough to go into the ministry and was willing to be persecuted under the Romans for his faith. He defended the Trinity. He confronted corrupt politicians. He was pro-life, stood up for the children against exposure of unwanted infants. But most of all, he was generous and gave to the poor.
And so, he wanted the attention. He gave away his wealth anonymously because he wanted the attention on God, which is fantastic. It is so neat, and I'm so thankful that you've clarified so many questions I had about Santa Claus and St. Nicholas and how we got to where we are as far as Christmas. And unfortunately, we're moving more towards the Henry VIII interpretation of Christmas. But I know Christians recognize December 25th as the birthday of Jesus, even though we don't know exactly what day he was born. And I'm just so thankful that you've done all of this research. And this is in your book, There Really Is a Santa Claus, History of St. Nicholas and Christmas Holiday Traditions. And that can be found at your website, AmericanMinute.com. I just ordered your book last night because I wanted so much more information. This is just fantastic. I mean, I'm just so thankful that you've taken the time to do all this research and to put it in book form so that we have easy access to it. It's just fantastic. And I'm just, again, thankful that you've done all this. Thankful that you've taken the time out of your very busy schedule to be with us to answer some of our questions. So,
well, thank you, and Merry Christmas to all, and to all a good night.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. You have a Merry Christmas. Okay, and safe travels.
God bless.
God bless you too. Okay, bye-bye.
Thank you for joining us on American Family Focus on Pennsylvania Issues. Please note that the views and opinions expressed by our guest are their own and do not necessarily reflect the opinions of the AFA of Pennsylvania. We value your opinions as well. To continue the conversation, visit afaofpa.org, where you'll find links to all our social media. If you're passionate about defending traditional values in our state, we invite you to get involved with the American Family Association of Pennsylvania. Visit our website at afaofpa.org or write P.O. Box 1048, Franklin, Pennsylvania 16323 to learn more and to take action. Together, we can make a difference for the families and the future of Pennsylvania.